Senior Focus. Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, and I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus, and it's a special edition being presented this week on the 80th anniversary of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 80 years on from the bombing, we're closer to facing the threat of World War III than ever before. The threat of a nuclear winter is far worse than the destruction felt 80 years ago. Technology now involving AI enables nuclear warheads to travel distances, far distances, by drone, and can be stored in silos on other people's land. For example, islands in the Philippines that China has claimed are theirs can have silos on them containing nuclear warheads that could reach with missiles to New Zealand. Some have suggested that as 9 countries have the nuclear capacity to deliver weapons, but only 2 are major superpowers with the largest collection, being in Russia and in the US, that we are, in fact, if you count the numbers of warheads at around 13,000, we are better off than we were some years back, where the armaments race was stronger and the numbers were far greater. So we have reduced the numbers. Some also say that knowing the awful impact of nuclear weapons, knowing the impact of a nuclear winter, superpowers could be tempted to pursue a limited war as an object to produce this in someone else's backyard, not their own. But we have China and North Korea increasing their capacity quite rapidly at the present time. So whereas a nuclear winter was seen as a Northern Hemisphere problem, we must now look at it in a different light, with nuclear-powered Chinese submarines practicing off our coast, mostly with nuclear weapons aboard. We can't afford to be complacent. I think it was a bit of a shock when they did a training exercise in the Tasman Sea recently. And it was following that we announced a beefing up of our defence budget. Rapid talks had happened with AUKUS. The partnership was Australia and the US. So the question is, what would a nuclear winter be like? And I've read a recent article in The Latest Listener by Sarah Lang, as she described an interview that she did with Alan Robock, who is a distinguished professor of climatology at Rutgers University, New Jersey, in the States, and has published over 500 articles on his research, but particularly research into the climate effects of a nuclear war. Now, Alan Robock is not short on ideas. He's not short on information or evidence. And he's warned a nuclear winter is a real and present danger. I'm quoting exactly from his words in the lecture he gave when he visited New Zealand earlier this year. In a nuclear war, people will suffer from the horrific effects of the blast, those in the immediate radius of the area, immediate death, burns, hemorrhaging, and acute radiation sickness are the 4 main likely outcomes for all people in that area. But the deadliest effects will be the black sooty smoke in the stratosphere, released through the collapse of buildings and cities. And as this black smoke will block out the sunlight, temperatures will drop below zero. These cold, dark, dry conditions most definitely will cause a global crop failure. I mean, we're all aware photosynthesis is a process that requires the sun, and you can't grow crops without the sun. Impacts are slowing global food production losses, but even backed up by livestock and marine food supplies, would still mean 10 times as many people would die of starvation as would die directly from the blast. And this nuclear winter would last 5 to 10 years. Survivors would be exposed to severe ozone depletion. While New Zealand would fare better than most, we would not be able to be importing food. Transport globally would cease to operate. We couldn't transport food even within our own country, as fuel would not be imported. The problem of hungry hordes coming to New Zealand by boat, and even local people fighting over food supplies, just can't be underestimated. And so we do have people who occasionally threaten to use nuclear weapons, but the biggest risk lies in human error, accidents, mistakes, and panic reactions. These could easily lead to nuclear war. And close calls have happened before. Usually they're hushed up. Even some of the excesses in conjunction with Fukushima were not widely available or made known, and some radioactivity experiments have been done, some testing has been done by the Japanese government, but it hasn't always been released as information to the public. The threat is being downplayed, partly because the weapons industry keeps growing and they have a vested interest in not seeing people respond to that threat. Now, the treaty that the US has with Russia to keep a lid on the numbers of weapons held, and to not proliferate the weapons industry, that treaty is due to end in February 26. But as yet, there's no murmurings or signs coming from the US as to what they propose to put in its place, if anything. So these are the background facts that you need to consider, that you need to give some thought to. And because at various times we've had people reacting, I mean, when I was growing up, we had people talking about the Russians could be dropping bombs on us. And I know kids had nightmares at school. They would tell us how they couldn't sleep at night because they were afraid of these bombs that might drop. I grew up with books in the house that talked about Strontium 90 and the fallout from the H-bomb. So I can't remember a time when I wasn't thinking about these issues at some point or other. Not every day, but certainly they've been the backdrop of my life. But it's always been quite far away. It's all, to me, I never had nightmares about the Russians dropping bombs because it just didn't seem real to me. This is different. humankind has come to a crisis point. It's a mixture of climate change and the nuclear threat. And both are deadly serious, and both really are going to impact on severely on certain communities. I think seeing what's been happening in Gaza has been very chilling. Nightly on the TV, it's something that has got through to people. In the same way, we need people to get through to the bigger questions about how could we promote disarmament? How could we say no to war? How could we truly begin to work on collaboration as a long-term way of promoting our survival instead of courting risky business that could well challenge our very survival as a species? Big questions to talk about, big questions to raise. This week, I attended a number of films in the International Film Festival, but the one that stood out the most to me was Grace, A Prayer for Peace. And this movie had its world premiere on Sunday. Dame Gaylene Preston, collaborating with a woman friend, Dame Robin White, a well-known artist, and together they have made the most extraordinary movie, the climax of which was a visit to the exhibition in Hiroshima, which actually tries to portray exactly what happened when the bomb was dropped. So you get an aerial view of the area and you get to see how it completely changed. The complete demolition of the city, flattened like a desert. Trees disappeared. And occasionally on the outskirts, the odd blackened trunk with some stumpy branches left. Hone Tuwhare wrote a marvellous poem, No Ordinary Sun, to describe the dropping of this bomb and its impact on the tree. And Gaylene refers to this and has the poem quoted amongst imagery of a certain tree. I don't want to spoil the movie for you, so I'm not going to go into great detail here, but there were so many touchstones as I watched it. I too have been to that exhibition in 2019, and I was moved just as we saw both these women moved in their experience, along with some other artists who were visiting with them. And when I returned, I felt it was important that the story of the bombing, of the impact on the civilians, of it being such a groundbreaking change, a point that humankind can't deny, can't ignore. It's a point of no return in a way. It must never happen again, is the thought that enters almost everyone's mind that goes through that exhibition. It's one of those experiences of a lifetime that you can't ignore, that you can't walk away from. And it's something that would open the eyes and hearts of many people, especially young people who've never experienced a time of war in New Zealand. And so it got me thinking it would be very worthwhile to envisage some sort of a opportunity for young people to be able to work towards a challenge, and their reward would be to go and actually visit Hiroshima. And someone I respect and admire very much, Will Flavel, who is a local politician out west and a school teacher by trade, an educationalist, and someone who inspires young people, he'd be the sort of person that I want to see involved in a project like this. In the meantime, there's Gaylene's film about Robin White, Gaylene's film Grace, does exactly what is not so easy to do. Not everyone can go to the exhibition, but Gaylene takes us there. And in the skillful way she's constructed the film, it builds to the climax of going to this exhibition and then actually wanting to be able to convey more about it. The film is touring New Zealand. It will be in many cities where the festival is over the next few weeks. And I'm sure that it will be very successful at the box office, not only in Aotearoa, but abroad, because it will speak to mankind at a critical time, because it carries urgency, because it doesn't ask for sympathy, because it unravels what is at the heart of humankind successfully living on the planet, sharing resources. It's the process of collaboration. If we can teach people to collaborate, if we can help people to understand how to grow empathy, that through empathy and sharing, trust is built. And there's so many situations in which Robin, as an artist, has created her works through collaboration, and her process of collaboration is evident, and it's part of the main focus of the film. So not only are the big questions being asked, but the answers are being delivered in the form of role modelling, how to go about such things. And it's an absolute delight to watch the artistic collaboration process in train, in flow. And it's a very much being in flow. And I think about how athletes talk about being in the zone and being in flow, and it's an energy, and it's being focused. And it's having no doubt, no negativity, no time to question, go backwards, no time to get stuck. When you're in the flow, you're just there in the moment, in all the glory of the creative moment. It's a treasured experience. And when people have that experience, it changes them. And if enough people have that experience, then they won't have any motive for wanting war. In fact, I think often people themselves don't want war. It's often leaders that draw people into war. But there again, those choices are made by people, and their life experience can direct them towards or away from the sorts of decisions that can lead to war. I think there was a time when the Cold War ended and the leadership was prepared to really discuss reducing the armaments. And we've been there before. It's not impossible. Like, I think sometimes people get stuck with the thinking. They say, oh, we've always had war. We've always done this. You know, it's always gone this way. They're actually realising that when the odds are different, when the risks are different, people do take a deep breath. I do know that there's an opportunity to work with groups on peace issues. There was a huge march over the bridge in Sydney just recently, and they took advantage of social media to let the world know just how many people were with them. This is not just a few crackpots who think are thinking about a nuclear winter. No, this is serious stuff. I do know that at times we try to be very positive and upbeat, and we do make an effort to give people a very balanced view of what's happening in society. And so I hope that nobody has nightmares following listening to this program. What I would suggest, though, that peace is everyone's business. Peace is not an absence of war, and it doesn't come as a gift without work. We all have the capacity to be hurt, to be angry, to be resentful, to carry revenge. I don't know a human being who hasn't had some experience that's led to one of those sort of reactions. But you don't have to hang on to it forever. You don't have to amplify it. You don't have to blame others. And this is, I think, where we come into having to question what is being said by leaders, what we want said, and what is healthy and valuable for us to focus on as a people. At the moment, we have a lot of conflict around language and culture issues, culture wars, as they're known, and it seems that it's hard to even hold an opinion without somebody else is aggravated by it. There's a lack of empathy and a lack of listening going on. That's quite disturbing. Now, getting back to peace is everyone's business, I'd like to, on the day that I'm making this program, it's International Peace Day, the day that you're listening will be a few days later, but I'd like to invite you for the next month to make some sort of practice part of your daily routine, whether it's greeting a plant in your garden and talking to that plant, whether it's reaching out with empathy to listen to another human being, whether it's reading books that inspire you about people who are working for peace. Whether it's getting to see the movie Grace. You might find a clip on YouTube about it as a start. Whatever your practice might be, however you do it, whether it's a 5-minute practice or a 10-minute practice, it might seem to you like a drop of red dye in the ocean, like cochineal. It might seem really insignificant. But in terms of shaping your attitude, if you think about it, your attitude, your innermost attitude, that's what is behind your thoughts. That's what's behind your thinking. And that is what also leads to feeling, which leads to action. So your innermost attitude is the most important treasure that you have. But it's like a fragile plant. It has to be fed. It's got to be nurtured. And so I'm suggesting that by taking up some practice that you can call your peace effort on a 5 to 10 minute basis a day, that you see it as part of building a strong and robust innermost attitude that can help you drop resentment, drop anger, drop irritableness, drop those things that get in the road of having greater harmony with others. Even people that you think, oh, well, you know, they're not my type. I couldn't get on with them anyway. Use that Zen beginner's mind approach, approaching things freshly in the moment, without the past baggage. Using a smile to greet people. And being present and being reflective and being taking a pause to just be in the moment before speaking, before reacting, before taking up a position. And you will find that in that kind of 30 seconds gap, there becomes a moment where you can suddenly drop the baggage, where you can actually not only be present and be yourself, but you can devote yourself to listening, to being able to see the other person as though seeing them for the first time, seeing them as you would see a stranger perhaps, where you don't have any baggage towards them. It's a really remarkable thing, but it can be done. It really can be done. I want to finish now, and I wish you all the best, and we will have a follow-up to this special edition program in the future. In the meantime, stay warm. Bye, everybody.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note Senior Focus is one word.
Ni hao, konnichiwa,
bonjour,
kia ora.
FM. Hey Stephen, what are you doing at 8 p.m. on Sunday night?
Well Emma, like you, I'm tuning into Kick Arts on Planet FM.
Well, who would want to miss it?
Kick Arts, Aotearoa's one-stop shop for all things art, entertainment, theatre, events, books and more.
Join us as we chat with fabulous guests, mix with some great Kiwi music and lots of laughs.
Kick Arts, every Sunday at 8 p.m. here on Planet FM.
Tune into Ireland Calling with Oliver Lee on Planet FM 104.6 every Wednesday night between 10 and 11 p.m. On the show, you will hear news from Irish correspondents, the latest Irish music, studio guests, and news of events happening in the Auckland area, and the chance to win great prizes. All this and much more on Ireland Calling on Planet FM 104.6 every Wednesday night between 10 and 11 p.m.
I like and love Auckland because it's very green and it's very natural. I live here from the last